Hello, gorgeous people, and welcome to another TV Central 101 podcast. I'm Aaron Ryan. This is episode 11, 2024. Seven have made a stronger start this year thanks to a reinvigorated Australian Idol, the inclusion of the 1% Club, and the return of Ron Idle's The Good Cop. Seven is now moving into Q2 with a lineup that includes the hit series Farmer Wants a Wife. Brooke Hall is head of scheduling at Channel 7 and joins me now. Brooke Hall, thank you for joining me at TV Central.
Thanks, Aaron. It's good to be here on this afternoon.
All right, before we look ahead, let's have a look back at Q1. Australian Idol returned in 2023, bringing a much-loved format back to Australia. I think there were some viewer concerns, perhaps including the choice of judges. It felt this year, though, that the format stepped up a notch and was back to the Idol we have always known. Did you feel that as well?
One thing that from 2023, I still thought it was a great show. Yes, it's in a highly competitive time slot like it was again this year against Survivor and Married at First Sight, our competitors' biggest brands. And so it was thrown straight into the deep end with it. I think like any shows, particularly, I know that everyone will be thinking it's an unusual thing to say that Australian Idol being a new show, but bringing it back, there are always learnings from it. I think we changed some of the format. We got to learn the characters a bit more. There was a tweak at the end of each audition to kind of have a result. Australia's got very used to that in most of our reality shows, whereas Idol, when we first brought it back the first time, it was you'd just go through the auditions and you'd end at a random point, whereas that was adjusted. I think having the three judges, I think they worked much better. I think Marsha was brilliant. It's amazing that her talent ability on TV, it's just magic. That was actually a bit of a learning from last year. There were a couple of times where we only had three judges, like Marsha was on there in a guest role just due to availability with all of the international talent. And we thought it worked better seeing the three judges. It's just easier to get that than working together on a panel with three, four. They're a bit spaced out. The people on the end can't even talk. So, look, a few changes, getting to know the characters more. More live shows, of course, that's always a feedback. I thought the show's fantastic. I still think, like, even though the ratings were, they're doing over 800,000 viewers, which is, that's nothing to sneeze about. The quality of that show, if we didn't have it in that spot, I think would be one of the biggest shows on TV.
Yeah, I think I also enjoyed the longer format this year. It felt last year that it went from 12 to, like, 6 and 2, and it was all over. So it was nice having those competition weeks over, you know, I think maybe six weeks, which was better. Did you find that was some good feedback having the longer format?
Yep, and the beauty about this show is because they're all truly raw, undiscovered talent. It's not people coming back from their obviously that's a part to do with the age demographic is much younger than a lot of the other talent shows. So you get more growth. Like, you are right. We not only did we race through the live shows last year very quickly, the auditions, we kind of went, oh, here are the ones who made it through. And then in 2 weeks, we're to 12. We went from 100 to 12. This year, we went from 50 to 35 to 21, then to 12. So even the process between auditions, the lives were longer to experience more growth, because you forget that most of these people, this is, they're performing in a live concert all of a sudden, week after week. There is enormous growth, and that is a great thing to watch. But even in between that, from auditions there, and we felt you got to know them more. It wasn't you weren't seeing people doing a roll call and going, oh my god, 10 are gone tonight, I can't do that. So here's some changes there. Magella, the EP from Channel 7, obviously drove that in internally, and working with Fremantle and Eureka, they were absolutely fantastic. A lot of the ideas were theirs as well. Extremely proud of that production. It's one of those ones where you can screen and go, like, you're really proud to put it out before it goes to air, regardless of the result, even though we all live and die by those ratings. Extremely proud of that format, and excited to have it back next year.
And what a great finale too, having Guy Sebastian and Shannon Noll back. That was excellent. Look, let's go on to Married at First Sight is obviously a juggernaut for Nine. So from a Seven point of view, how does a programmer schedule against a show like that? Are you programming to beat Maths, to be competitive at least, or are you just looking for a different audience and aren't watching Maths?
That's a bit of everything. Like, look, you got to give credit to them. That Married at First Sight is an extraordinary program. It's like it's the biggest show on TV. It has a great launch platform out of the Australian Open. We had that for many years as well. Look, that show's it's huge on broadcast. It's a huge digital powerhouse. Of course, with our aim is to compete and do as good as we can against it. But knowing that there are it's 24 hours a day. There's 7 days a week, and the ratings year is like 50 weeks a year. We want to win overall, but we've got to take it to their main format. There will be a point that it changes. So look, ideally we'd like to beat them, but being realistic at the moment, it is the biggest show on TV, and we want to be as competitive as possible against that. I think we're showing this year is forgotten in that with Married at First Sight that Survivor is 10's biggest and strongest brand. Personally, it's one of my favorite shows as well. Like that's the thing about these networks is it's not all just because we live with this network, we don't watch the other two shows. I do. I enjoy them. So being in there last year, Idol and Survivor were neck and neck with MAFS in front. And this year, our aim was like, how can we improve our position? And Idol grew its streaming audience. But that's an easy thing to say. Everything in streaming is growing. I think something got lost is Idol grew its broadcast linear audience and clearly became the second tentpole in that slot, whereas last year it was a battle. So we think we've got a foothold, now established ourselves, and now got ourselves into second place in that slot. It's can we improve another step again next year?
And it does show Seven's, I guess, depth in their schedule because the minute Married at First Sight dropped from four episodes down to two, Seven now have weekly wins. Is that right?
Yeah, and look, that was a benefit of as well. But let's say 1% club, which obviously was 2023. It was look, 2023 was a hard year for new formats on all networks. The one that really broke through, and it wasn't a strict reality, so you probably got lots of the audience going, yay, hallelujah, can't there be more of this, was the 1% Club. So that was the biggest new show on TV in 2023. And the one thing about it not being a strict reality and not being serialized is it doesn't just have to run in a 4 week block 3 nights a week. So a bit out of necessity, a bit out of us trialing as well with the audience last year, it ran in a couple of different areas and against different shows, and it held up wherever it was run. It ran on a Wednesday night where we launched it had been in quite a space, but then when we moved it towards the end of the year, it actually ran on Sunday nights at the end of last year against block room reveals and held its audience. So it's a hard thing saying is something going to go against Married at First Sight and that thing, and but to, we wanted just to have that overall picture. It's not just three slots on TV. And going into Q1, it's Married at First Sight, and it largely held its entire audience. So that is all part of it. Part of like we talk about all the boring stuff as well. Like everyone doesn't like hearing about it, but our news, Home and Away, that's there all the time. Better Homes on Friday night. It's all part of the picture. Tentpoles get all the headlines and excitement, but yes, 1% Club. That was about strengthening, knowing we're going against MAFS and it runs 4 nights a week. What can we do to help Q1 outside of just Idol versus Married at First Sight and Survivor and 1% Club. We're really proud of how that's gone.
So with the 1% Club and it being really honest, did you actually think it was going to be as big as it was? Because I liked the format, but when I just saw those ratings coming through, I thought, wow, this is actually huge. Bit of a surprise. Was it a surprise for Seven?
Look, have to give a bit of credit to my boss here. Angus Ross was the one who really drove that, and that was always a favourite. The one thing about it, I would say, is, and this doesn't mean necessarily mean success here. It wasn't just a brand new format to the world that going untested, or it had broken through in the UK similar. Now, that doesn't always mean that it's going to translate here, but it did have a proven track record. It for a quiz show as well, the scale on that looks amazing. It looks like amazing on TV. It looks like a leading tentpole, even though it's a comedy quiz. Yes, a bit of a gamble on the host going outside of the typical, list of 10 television can do. A lot of things came off. The biggest thing about that is like, yes, did it overperform? I could say, yes, that it was in the amount number it came in and we went, that's a terrific result. But we weren't nervous about it necessarily because it had proven track record and it's just a good fun format. It's a bit different. The biggest thing that surprises people, everyone thinks quiz and they think it's an older demographic. It was one of our youngest shows. It's like it brought in a huge amount of men 25, 54, particularly in the southern markets where we promoted it in the AFL.
Well, you've now used up all the season two episodes. I believe season three has been commissioned. In the meantime, the UK version is on. I thought it might have just been a filler while MASS was on, but geez, that's doing solid business as well. I imagine that'll stay on Wednesday nights for a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of fine. We're looking for all the networks, as you know. Well, sorry, it's a bit of a stereotype, but have so much strict reality. And then when it's not there, in the past, the fallback has been OBDOCS, Highway Patrols, your border. So our competitors are the same. We've been trying to look for a while now of going, well, how can we offer an alternative there? If it's not strict reality, and then we don't want to just, the traditional formula has been that. So this is one of those things of going, can be dangerous using that. You've got to be careful about, you don't want to hurt the local version brand yourself. But we're thinking this will run for a period there while it rests, and then we come back with the Australian one and not have them on it there at the same time necessarily.
All right, moving ahead. Let's look at Q2. Farmer Wants a Wife is back. Some dating shows have faded lately, but Farmer has stayed strong. I think it even improved last year. What do you think is its key to its longevity?
Yeah, look, we often get this thing about dating. It's funny when people talk about dating is one of the key franchises in every territory in the world. I would say that the one thing that we've seen across worldwide trends in this genre is everything's becoming more salacious and heightened, whether it be even streamers like Netflix has got Too Hot to Handle, and there's Love Island that's breaking through, like in a lot of VOD platforms around the world. Of course, in this market, Married at First Sight is a show. There's F-Boy Island, which is on HBO Max and Foxtel. Like, you hear all those titles, and then you put Farmer Wants a Wife there. Technically, they sit under a dating genre, but I don't think those shows could sit further apart in their tone and nature, as opposed to salacious and all about sex appeal and noise. I'd say Farmer is, it's like genuine, it's awkward. It's almost the opposite to the modern dating perception and world, and I think that that is really separated. We've been very careful in our campaign to really pull it apart about that. There's no one on the show, or largely we feel, and we get that through the casting, that is there to improve their Instagram account number. These are people that struggle to talk to other people in a dating environment. And I think that really cuts through now, particularly with social media and dating apps and people finding it so hard and judgmental. It's a world almost pre-social media is what we're getting a glimpse of Farmer Wants a Wife. I think that there's a beauty and authenticity to that. That's how we feel. And we really try in their campaign. That's why you see heritage promos. Almost all the couples are successful. It's like the opposite of most other dating shows. These people get married and have kids together. They don't have fights with each other on screen. So it's like, and again, this season here, it's a very high success rate. You actually see in some of the opening of the show, we're updating from last year and the year before. That's in the episode. You will see us cut back to, hey, last year we said they were together. Here they are with a baby. Here they are with engaged. And I don't think many shows can do that in any format of their success rate of reality TV.
Yeah. I was going to ask about a few spoilers about Farmer Wants a Wife. You gave us a little one. My next podcast, though, is with Sam Armitage. So I'll leave her to give you some spoilers. Wednesday nights have had a shake-up with the front bar and then a staggered schedule across markets. Talking Footy has had a few slots over the years. How is that double shot now of going of the front bar and Talking Footy? How's that going, especially in the AFL markets?
Oh, yeah, look, front bar's been... It's one of those shows that I still can't believe after many years now it's still in growth, whereas it started as a midnight show after football on Friday nights. That's where it first started, then moved to Thursday at 10:30, then 9:30, then took on the footy show and beat it and held that spot. This is just in the southern markets, of course. Now, like, the AFL is obviously a huge part of Seven's DNA, and the great thing about the new deal is we've still got 8 years to go on AFL. Most times sports rights, they might do it. and most of your shows you're committed to 2 years or something like that. By doing us that, we've added that Front Bar Now AFL show airs nationally at 8:30 in prime time. I don't think that I think that gets underestimated a lot about how we're together with the AFL, they're great partners, trying to grow the game. And in Sydney and Brisbane each week at 8:30 in prime time on our prime channel, we have an AFL show every week. Now, do sometimes in the past, has that hurt us? Probably in share, but it was very short term. Now in Sydney and Queensland, it's performing on par with an alternate program, so we don't have to split it. Talking footy is a bit different. It's a much more AFL core type of audience. But of course, look, it's got some of the biggest stars on TV with Sam Pang and Mick Malloy. That certainly helps. But we're really proud of that because we think not only is it grown into where we can now run it in Sydney and Brisbane in that prime spot, but it's also part of our bigger picture to grow the AFL with them into a Northern game, and we're doing a lot of things. So really excited about that. If you would have said a couple of years ago you can be running that show into Sydney and Brisbane in prime time and be okay, like that would have been above our expectations. But they've been great, great partners, and working with the AFL. So, yes, it's one of those things that a plan comes off.
Yeah, that really is huge, having AFL in northern states. Wow. Sunday nights are locked in with Farmer and Spotlight. Mondays looks like Farmer and 911. Wednesdays, of course, we have the 1% Club UK at the moment and the Front Bar. Can you give us a heads up of what we might expect on Tuesdays now that Kitchen Nightmares is over?
Yeah, so we're just going to be holding for 2 weeks because we've in 2 weeks we've got a Wednesday night AFL game. It's the Anzac Eve. It's like one of those special marquees, so we have to bump our whole schedule forward a day. But following that, we're going to be coming in with we're going to be going with a new UK drama. We're going to give it a try. So obviously we had it's a short run, it's a four-parter, but we had Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, which is
huge.
Kind of yeah, like a different type of thing, and you never quite know. Like it was a big story in the UK, but it was largely unknown here. But obviously got very topical. So we're going to give something else a try on that Tuesday. And again, it'll be dropping on 7plus, the Marlowe Murder Club. Look, a bit of different UK crime drama, female detectives, but I'd say it's a bit brighter, colourful, and a bit of comedy in it as well. So that's what we're going to give it a role. And we think kind of farmer, once a wife lead-in is a suitable type audience mix. So we're still going to give something else, something new and different, and a short run trial on Tuesday nights coming up.
All right. So what else can viewers expect in Q2?
So in Q2 will also be Dream Home. So those promos have already hit. Look, we've been in the reno space before with House Rules. It did a great job for us a while and then fatigued. How I like to describe that is, for a long time, and this is a giant generalisation, so I don't want people jumping up and down about it, is the block was more inner-city apartments in their original format, I'm talking like a decade ago, and really luxe, high-end renovations, and House Rules was a suburban red brick and more lower deal, like it was more realistic renovations of people like doing up their homes. To do that, it's hard to... Why it fatigued over time, we kind of lost our headline. I think the block's merged, it's moved into homes. One thing, how I describe Dream Home is, obviously Chris Brown, we've got one of the best talent and TV talent to host it. We thought House Rules was all about realistic home renovations and really hearty, and the block was high-end luxe thing. How I'd say Dream Home is it fits in the middle, and maybe this is something to do with social media and aspiration. People aren't as worried about that's an unrealistic reno. I'd say that we're going to have the real heart. These are real deserving people that are on the show. So a lot of families that are struggling with mortgages at the moment to do that. So all the contestants are all deserving, just struggling to get through general life, which we kind of all get. Cost of living, interest rates has made that even more relevant now. But we're going to have more fuck-off renovations. We found over research over time, it doesn't matter if you're a struggling, aspirational, like everyday person. Everyone wants the $10,000 marble kitchen bench top. It doesn't matter. That's what they want to see. We're going to be delivering, keeping the heart and realness of deserving people and renovating. It's going to be very positive. You won't see much fighting for a reality show on the show, but you're going to see some tremendous renovations. And that's how I describe the mix. So that That'll be rolling out in Q2 with Farmer soon. So we'll get to see that. Actually, in Farmer's week one, you'll get to see all the character promos drop in nights 1, 2, 3. So we get a glimpse of what's next to come on Seven.
I'm just wondering the expectations though for Dream Home. It just why I was at the 7Up front, and the audience absolutely loved it, and the promos, just as you said, these Aussie battlers, it just has a whole lot of heart in it. Are there big expectations for this one?
Oh, look, we're really confident in it. We think it's right in Seven's sweet spot there, middle Australia. It's feel good, warm TV. I think it's very relatable, like homes are. Like everyone always talks about homes and cooking, staple ground of TV. So, yeah, we've got a big expectations. But one thing we do know is new shows are hard. They just are. And it's not free to air, it's all global platforms. It's movie studios making the 25th Marvel innovation as their spin-off. It's just, but that is the one thing to know on those things. Like last year, I think that for new shows returning, there was 1% Club, The Summit is coming back from Nine, and Australian Idol was the Australian Idol, and Thank God You're Here, technically were the only other new returnings, but they were old franchises rebooted as well. So it's Dream Home is a new format. That immediately makes it hard. But we're really confident in what's been delivered. Shine have done an amazing job. It's got heart. It looks amazing. And we're obviously we think the promo campaign that's been rolling out already is very strong.
Well, Chris Brown's going to be obviously very busy this year. Dancing with the Stars is back with Chris and Sonia Kruger. I think viewers will expect quite the banter between Chris and Sonia. Both are very cheeky, aren't they?
Yeah, look, that's part of dancing. I thought it's done an amazing job since we've brought it back. Last year was the first year since it had come back that it had probably shouldn't, like, the wrong word is bad dancers, but it wasn't an all-stars version. And people often say that, I often think that that's the best part of the show. Yes, it's amazing seeing someone get 3 tens and doing a perform magic duck, but you can see that lots of places. The beauty about these series is the journey, where you get some people in that are just terribly awkward dancers and get better. You get some that don't get any better, but you're just smiling along for the ride. Sonia, I think that this is, like, she's a great television host. I think this is her in her ultimate element. She, like, obviously an expert in dancing, but she's so quick. She's funny. She pushes the boundaries on it, but it's dancing like you wouldn't expect. And Chris is fantastic on this as well. So it's a new look at that, but a slight change up in the judging panel as well. So, look, Helen's back
Ooh.
this year, because so she had to take last year off, but kind of like iconic with the series. So we lose Daryl, but we gain Helen's returning. I'm very excited about this. I genuinely think, like, depending on environment, and you can't control everything. Like, we could go into another lockdown. Who would have guessed that that would have happened and sent ratings up on certain things? But if I had to guess right now, I still think Dancing on the Stars will be our highest rating show of the year. The cast is amazing. We've seen a few of the eps. You just can't help but smile and laugh through this whole thing. And I think in the middle of winter, coming to watch a fun, bright dancing show with a lot of humor and heart is going to play really well. Particularly, everyone knows the cast. I think most times on a lot of celebrity shows and all networks go through it, people normally go, oh yeah, they've got two really good ones, and then I know two more names, and who I'm going to do a quick Google to check the photo of the other six. And this is one year I'm like, wow, I know them, I can picture them every time. And that's been our feedback, and they certainly deliver. So very excited about that coming. And I think when the promo's done, we've only had our team, Graham Donald, talk, like, give the pitch of it. But if it comes off right, I think it could be a fantastic promo too, which is, that's very important, your marketing campaign going into.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. I have watched every season since it started. Are you able to reveal which other judges are coming back this year? Because sometimes there's been four and sometimes there's been three. And then some of the judges from the Channel 10 series came into ours. Which makeup have we got this year?
So, mention that Helen's back. I'll say three, so then no one can definitely know the rest. But so I mentioned that at the top, Helen's back. We thought that Craig from the UK, who was in last season, added something. Like, people often talk about the main judge, but He's not mean in nature. He's just brutally honest, and it's in a comedic way, which I think is really important now. You can't just be blatantly nasty. Particularly, these are people trying to dance that never have done it before, or lots of them haven't done it. And Mark is back, so you'll have to guess the last one.
Oh, we've had a female one, and we've had obviously Todd McKenning in there too. So, oh, someone's coming back and someone's not. All right, just one quickly to tick off. The Good Doctor has began its final season in America. That's been around for a while. Are we expecting that soon down under?
Yes, so I mentioned the UK drama that's coming on Tuesday nights. It's just going to follow that. So the UK, so it'll be end of Q2. We'll be coming back, and we're looking at. They did a really nice promo in the US about like kind of a say goodbye, touched on the very start. And I'd imagine you'll see something here where we just want to kind of lean in. Like that show was a very, very big hit for us when it first arrived. It was amazing that it kind of broke through and did big broadcast overnight numbers, which a lot of US dramas weren't at the time. So, no, it's been very important for Seven. So we'll do a campaign. It'll probably be around June-ish return for us. So not too far behind the US.
All right, so final season there, 10 episodes. Look, every network has its hits and misses, everyone. Over the years, there has been some notable turkeys. So perhaps the elephant in the room, and this is without seeing an episode, Stranded on Honeymoon Island looks, well, it looks corny. There were a few giggles at the upfront, I think in the wrong spots. What can you tell me about this format before I rush to judgment?
No, look, I understand that, but to that one thing I'd say about the upfronts, it was no show footage, so that it was always hard when you're trying to give a reel of there. We're the first English speaking nation to do the show, in classic Australian ways of all formats, and that's of all the things. If you look at what often they are in other territories, particularly in Europe, when they come to Australia, they are altered. This would be the case. I think I can happily say that it's not one that sits in a typical Seven lane. We think it'll be younger. We think it'll be streaming. We're looking at the best way to advertise it because the first impression is people see wedding gowns and just think, "Oh, what is this?" That's kind of nothing to do with it. The way I would pitch it is the creator over there was talking about how can you help in the modern dating world. What are all the problems in society? The premise of this show is to find love, and that's where it's going. And going, the problem in society is people are ultimately distracted and way too judgmental at first reactions. There's no time to get to know someone. Some apps are just swipe, swipe, swipe on a superficial look. Someone says one thing and they move on. Everything's instant gratification in this world now. And so how do you take that out? He's like, I think people, if you took away their phones, their distractions, their TV, their friends, everyone around them, all the environment, and you just got to know the person, then that gives you a real shot. But how do you do that? So the premise, even though you might go island and wedding dresses, and that can be two alarming things that come up and go, come on. I think that is a really misleading thing. And we've got to try and work out how we invite the audience in to see past that. Because what it is about is getting these two people and go, here, you're on an island. We're gone. You've got no TV. You've just got this to live on. And you're going to get to know them over the next week. No contact, no distractions, no social media, no phone calls. You got to talk to another human being. So there could be something you could have an immediate chemistry and then you find out their problems. Or you could go, I would not talk to you for 1 second if I came across you in a bar or something else and I'd run off or I'd have all these problems. And maybe you need to get the force to know them underneath and connect better with them. The general theory is if you can spend 2 weeks on an island and do nothing, no movies, no phone, no TV, no other human communication, you get off the end of the other island at 2 weeks and you don't want to kill them, you should marry them for life and vice versa. So it's kind of forcing all that stuff together. So I must admit there's a job to do on the campaign first, but from what we've seen of it, it's come up really well, surprisingly raw. People that have said, why am I here with this person? I can't go another 10 minutes, never mind 10 days. And they've found love. And vice versa has happened. Like, I'm so happy. They've immediately judged them. This is perfect. I'm so happy I'm stranded with this person. And then they learn, hey, once you get past the initial chemistry, There isn't much else here, and that's important too. So you get two different journeys with these couple, but understand. And when we roll out with actual show footage, I think that will really help, as opposed to we were having to grab images and kind of sell a format that is difficult. And as you say, it's in that dating space again. How do you differentiate it? And that will be hard, but we're really confident on what's come through on screen so far.
All right, no rushing to judgment then. All right, so some big formats still to come this year. Some will still be in production, of course. What's looking good for the rest of 2024?
Yeah, look, I'm excited about some of the ones we've gone through. Obviously, the end of the year, we've got our back perform for The Voice has been our biggest show since we returned in 2021. That's back. All new judging panel bar one. So that's the biggest change we've had since our run there. So that's going to be something we have to really push out with completely new panel, basically. Guy, the only original standing. And that's going to be a big priority for us. Obviously, it will be against The Block, which is one of Nine's other big powerhouse formats. And knowing that they've got the Olympics as a launch platform, we'll be looking at what we can do on that and our campaign going into that. And then rolling into MKR, which look back, that came back in its original format, but to see last year it have audience growth and really perform, there'll be slightly more eps of MKR this year. And I think they've shot ep one yesterday of MKR. So like that's already going to filming. It is a funny thing where you're often filming things 6 months in advance and trying to see. So they will be running in conjunction with each other again, like they were this year in the back part of the year. But most exciting, well, the biggest change, and it's probably a boring detail to the general public, but is the AFL has been 40 years a part of Seven's DNA. The whole time I've been at Channel 7, it has been an anchor of our platform 2 or 3 days a week, 30 weeks a year, and it's never been on bloody 7+. And that viewers don't understand that now. They view 7 as 7+ and 7+ as 7. And when some people are go to there to watch the AFL and we go, we don't have the rights, it is infuriating. It's understandably that. I think that's going to change us so much. And of course, cricket. So as of September, if I had to pick the most exciting thing that you'll from September onwards, you will every piece of AFL, AFLW, every piece of women's cricket and men's cricket won't just be on Seven, it'll be on 7+ day and night. So like that fundamentally is a big change to our company. To get digital cricket and AFL, I can't understate how important that is to us and how excited we are. We think 7+ is doing an amazing job as a platform and doing great minutes, and it doesn't have our two big sports on it. So I think that will just churn in, not just what it does for the sport, but pushing other people into other shows from there.
Yeah. Well, let's have a chat about ratings because VOZ is now fully operational. What trends are you seeing with the VOZ data coming in this year? I imagine pretty good considering that Seven does well in regional areas.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting thing, VOZ, and maybe being a data person, someone who looks for the data, all the VOZ data that is now being reported to the market, we've always been able to see. So, like, I almost say that a simplistic way of saying VOZ, which I think it's lost everyone saw its new rating system, there's metro TV ratings and there's regional broad, sorry, there's metro broadcast ratings, there's regional broadcast ratings, and there is national digital ratings. We've always had those three. It's been the mess has been everyone would see the metro broadcast numbers at 9 o'clock and report on it. Then we go, hey, what about the regional broadcast numbers at 10 o'clock? And then we go, hey, what? And don't forget the streaming numbers at 11 o'clock. By then, how annoying is it to go, this is the result, and then this is another result, and this is another result? All VOZ is doing is those three numbers are together. The problem is, I guess, I understand people like this is a new number, but it's just the same three numbers that we would do just all in one. It's not just so it's metro broadcast, regional broadcast, and national streaming of the show in one figure. I understand that the media don't see them broken out, and that's probably created a kerfuffle, but it is comparable. We can see exactly year on year how they've done from that. The one other thing a lot of people reported reach, whereas I'm a national, the average audience is the figure. And that's probably confused people. So in terms of trends, it's from TV programmers, we still see the same thing in Don't Set a City. So I think it's just a truer thing. Whereas previously, MAFS would have been example, its finale last night did 1 million metro broadcasts. It did 400,000 regional broadcasts, and it did 400,000 streaming. So this year, everyone came out and said it did 2 million viewers, which is correct, a huge number. But the old number just would have said it did 1 million. But that was just only one third of the pie. So I think we've got some jobs to do in explaining it, but the national TV average audience has always been there. It's just being reported in one go rather than three little bits. So,
Well, I guess from what the media do get, I'm using BVOD and national broadcast numbers. It certainly has reinforced Seven's number one position with Seven News. Aside from the odd Sunday night, I'm pretty sure every night they've won in both reach and average results. That must be warming for the hard working teams across Australia and in regional areas.
yeah, and look, I've always like we've seen, always got to see the national numbers. I've always found it amazing that if you live in Wollongong or Newcastle, apparently you don't that number didn't get used to report and broadcast. They're still the same person, but amazingly, like yes, those regional viewers count. If you're a regional viewer and you watch us on 7+, you would count in the national BVOD number, but you didn't count if you watched on TV in the regional TV number. So I'm very glad that that number's being represented now because it was insanity before. But yes, look, our Seven News bulletins, I think a lot of people don't realize that when those regional comes in, we are not like some of our competitors where the metro bulletin just gets fed out into the country. We run a separate newsreader and bulletin with updates for that. And that naturally, viewers reward you when you give them some extra local content as opposed to just publishing the Metro City bulletin into the bush.
Well, Sunrise has cemented itself as number one, even with the change of host to Koshi to Shervo. The transition seems to have been quite smooth, and the ratings are remaining very good for Sunrise.
Yeah, look, I'm really proud about that. Look, I personally think, like, obviously, that's our news department. They handled that change. Sarah Stinson was in charge over that transition. And look, it's always hard changing a winning team like that. Like, people always talk about why it's not fresh and new, fresh and new. But there is a comfort factor with people waking up every single morning, turning on to get their news from someone. And I guess it's like a lot of radio hosts, if you think about it the same, that the big successful ones are long running, people familiar with, but no, they want a trusted voice, they want to know. I think it really helped the fact that Shervo was widely known in the public domain, obviously in a very different way, but wasn't a brand new face that you had to say, hey, welcome, this is this person. He was on Weekend Sunrise. He was on reading sport news bulletins. So it was a slow transition and he had a wider public profile, but extremely happy. Look, Sunrise is one of our most important shows. And if being the market leader in that space every morning to promote your whole network and the shows there is of vital importance to us.
All right, so now one show that has been given a little bit of a run for its money lately has been The Chase Australia, with of course Tipping Point starting on Nine. There was obviously going to be an initial look in the Nine format. It's been 2 to 3 months now. What trends are you seeing now between the two?
No, like obviously a big change. Obviously, the 5 o'clock slot, each of us networks probably only change it once every 10 years or something like that. So, like, we've had Deal. When Deal fell over, we tried $1 million minute. No, like, I can't even remember what that it was now for a short period before we got the Chase to come in. Look, the one interesting data for that, like, that has certainly improved. Chase was highly dominant in that spot, and now it is neck and neck. Traditionally, when you see something in the marketplace like that is, well, they've taken viewers off us, like it's a transfer of viewers in a time slot. That is the normal thing when two competitors clash and there's a movement in the ratings result. Chase this year on broadcast linear is holding its entire audience. What Nine has done by pulling Tipping Point in is they've had a 30% lift to join us. So rather than having a 30% advantage, they've brought new viewers into the slot. So
Wow.
it's actually quite a remarkable thing. When we're looking at it, we're like, wait, how's The Chase averaging identically to last year? I don't understand this. Had to run it a few times and then going, no, it's just they've lifted the viewers. And look, that's a great thing for television, as opposed to, hey, they're coming in and taking their viewers. By them changing that slot, they've actually brought in new viewers to the slot. So yes, we've lost our advantage, but it's, and this is probably a broader thing for networks need to look overall. That is the ideal situation. We often look at each other and go, how did we go against them? If we're looking at our own score lane, Chase hasn't missed a beat. It's just tracking along a thing. It's just by Nine in improving their slot, they've just added viewers to TV. And I think that that's one thing that could almost be expanded out. Seven and Nine, the two leaders in this free-to-air marketplace, over the last year have not lost any viewers off broadcast linear TV. Our viewing is actually slightly up. Digital up 50%. You can point over there. Our broadcast numbers, there is no more decline with the two market leaders. We're growing, often like Married at First Sight and Idol wow. both grew. Chase is holding, Tipping Point grew. Seven, like, this is in broadcast TV numbers. And I think that that slot is a reflection of what these two networks are doing as together, is having more people watch the old-fashioned TV with an aerial and then soaring on digital. Those two marketplaces look, it's really strong. But yes, that, it's an interesting thing. We don't have the advantage anymore, but we've lost no viewers. They're just bringing more people to television. And you know what? We can all do that together. I'd take that everywhere.
Yeah. Look, in fear of having this podcast go for 4 hours, I had a few questions about the multi-channels, but I'll ask just one. Have you got any new or returning shows that you can announce for this year?
We do. Look, obviously, different type of economic things with the multi-channels, but Seven Mates still going to be rolling out. It's probably the one we produce the most new local content for. And they've got a Paulie Fennec sitcom coming up. New Family Guy and American Dad will be paired with that in kind of a wild comedy night in only Seven Mate type style. That'll be coming in May. So the three of them will be in that, but you still have your new Truckers. They're going to have other new productions in that kind of mate-ish space.
All right, now for the question. This is an annual ongoing joke between Angus and I, really. So, but you're here for the podcast, so here we go. What is the status of Fam Time?
I don't understand everyone's obsession with this show, but there. But yeah, this is where I'm going to do. I haven't done it once this interview, but I'm going to handball it back, and you can ask him personally yourself. That's his responsibility.
All right, I'll definitely ask him. No, it was obviously announced a couple of years ago, and then it didn't come that year. Seven said it was coming the next year. Then it might have been going to Seven Plus, and then there was talk James Warburton didn't like it. And then there was, it's been going on. It's just been going an ongoing joke. But I'll definitely ask Angus.
You follow it better than me. No.
I definitely do. It's been fun. All right. Feedback from these podcasts is that people like hearing from the person behind the role. So first of all, what is your day to day job? What does a somewhat standard day look like for you?
It depends on the day, but like largely, like in our programming role, yes, like people like to talk about the glory. You sit there and you pick shows. So it's a very simplistic way of looking at it. And if it, a lot of our stable schedule is very stable, and it's about moving decisions. Our thing is here is going every day. We sit there and go, how can we get as many people bloody turning on the screen, whether it be TV or digital, Seven or Seven Plus, every single day, and maximizing in that. And that would be whether getting a concise message going across our all company, whether it's production coming in and going, how does this fit into where, what time of year is it going to run? What day a week is it going to run? The tone of that then to, okay, what are our on-air promos going to be? How are we messaging that? How is sport integrating? How does it get all scheduled together? So a typical day is very hard. It's not here's the morning thing, here's the agenda. It's kind of following for the day. So today it's getting ready for, okay, Farmers about to launch. Have we got our campaigns already at the weekend? Are we on time? What time is it out? What are the get ready now? All the Dream Home promos have to start in there. That's kind of how we're looking for it today. But outside of the morning, check the ratings, run all the data, who watched us from what region, which markets, who underperformed, where we need to go. That out of that first hour, every day varies from the problem to do that. And rate, and do you know what? the viewers ultimately control that. We get a scorecard every day. It can be like radio get it every 3 months and go, how did you go? We get it every morning and go, how did you go in this market at that time? And then that causes like a daily reaction. Do we need to move that? Do we need to do this? Do we need to lift a campaign? Do we need to zigzag here? It's kind of hard to put in a, you know, a structured way.
Yeah. So what roles did you have before head of scheduling that kind of led to where you are now?
I was meant to be an accountant nerd because I'm actually a data geek at heart. I also get lost at people. So I actually was doing economics and statistics was what I was doing. And then I did a part-time work at a audience research company because you always had to go and do that as part of your degree. I was just lucky enough to do the research company I got put with or met up with was ADA Q Scores, and they did research on TV ratings or TV numbers. So did focus groups and things on that. And I was someone who understood numbers and was a geek, but also loved television. That apparently was not a high crossover. So I loved it, got into that, worked for there for a while, and then worked for Foxtel for their programmers and things over there, and then came across 15 years ago to launch 7Mate programming. So started very narrow, and that was kind of an easy job to do because they show you as a programmer, you should never program for yourself or your family or your friends. That is a cardinal sin. But 7Mate, when I was in my young 20s launching there and going, oh, Family Guy, American Dad, and programming things like that, probably cheated a bit. You could program a bit for yourself. So I was launched 7Mate, and that's where the experience has come from. And I'm still inside the 7 doors now, just across different things and learnt things over time.
And what shows do you enjoy viewing aside from switching on Channel 10 for Survivor?
A mix of two things. Like a bit of a nerd of things. Like I watch ABC Insiders, Gruen. So I love that type of stuff on there, and of course, like everyone else, that on SVOD I like a high end drama on their SVOD streaming services. Of course, I can binge them from time to time. My biggest consumption though would be probably have to be reality TVs on the free to air. So that's partly your job. You got to be across that, seeing what everyone's doing, and a lot of live sport, whether it be ours, our competitors. Things like that. It's very typical person, I think, watching giant broad appeal shows, some out of interest, some out of you've got to be across it all, and then dip into everyone has their weird little things that they watch on there. But yeah, so I consume a lot of TV, and I know that sounds like some people go, that sounds amazing. And I'm like, it's not always.
So do I. Sunrise and Seven News are now under the same umbrella as Seven's headquarters. Do you think that's made a difference? I can just imagine that there'll be more vibrancy with the hustle and bustle of making television sort of surrounding the engine room.
It certainly helps the whole company. You feel more like a TV network. Like obviously news, they're on all the time, almost all day. That newsroom is buzzing, whether it be a weekend, a public holiday, a day or a night. So like they give the whole company a vibe. You don't feel like you're just working in a standard office. So I think that helps the environment of everyone. Of course, it helps with crossover. It's like anyone. You can send anyone an email. It's a different relationship when you can talk to someone in person. So that has increased a lot more with Sunrise and News being in the building. And I think it just helps build personal relationships. So, and makes us feel like a TV company. So yeah, look, enjoy it. It's amazing here having the studios. I know some people in my team love being able to go down and see the sets of those things. So it's, you forget we're still in the magical world of TV, and it's important not to forget that because it is still quite a unique and amazing experience if you take advantage of it.
Yeah. All right, final question. What are your projections and predictions for Seven for the rest of the year in terms of ratings?
It's the most confident I've felt with their formats. Like you've always got to be careful about having a mixture of familiar and stable schedule, but you've got to keep trying some things new. So even though we got some few giggles about Stranger on Violent, I think that is an important thing to keep doing. You've got to keep Find the next thing, like 1% club, or that. And look, you're going to fall on your face sometimes, but you can't just stay there. But I'm most confident that, like, Dream Home is new, but I feel really good it's in our space. Stranded on Honeymoon Island might surprise. It is a different lane there. I think it's younger and more in the streaming type of, but we're really confident in that. Dancing Voice and MKR, they're right in our lane. Farmer's about to launch. So I think we're going to be really confident. I think that if I had to predict something, I think Seven's going to have an amazing strong year. I think Nine are going to be really strong too. They've got Olympics and they've got the 20th anniversary of the block. I think you might have Seven and Nine. My aim is, because I think it's the greater health of all of us and free-to-air TV, that we both end the year with a bigger audience than we did last year on TV and double our digital audience, and we can go free-to-air is, it's never gone anywhere, but there's a perception out that it's gone, and that's my thing. I think that together Seven and Nine are going to come out and go, we've got more viewers than we ever, like, ever have before, and forget, we're the two biggest players in content in this country.
Well, it definitely looks like another big year for Seven. I'm throwing all my huge predictions for Dream Home. It looks awesome. But good luck for the rest of 2024, and thank you for joining me today, Brooke.
No worries. Thanks, Aaron.
All right, that was Brooke Hall, head of scheduling at Seven. That's it for another one-on-one podcast. For all the latest television and streaming news, ratings, and podcasts, head to tvcentral.com.au. But for now, I'm Aaron Ryan. Thanks to Brooke Hall. Bye for now.